So welcome. My name is Bruno Turkoli. I am a developer evangelist for Microsoft. I am going to talk to you about the phone and the cloud. But before I do that, let's get set up. I've got the following software installed. I recommend you take your time, go through this list. Just this exercise alone will be a good amount of time and effort. So the goals is to get traditional server light consuming data that will be ultimately hosted in the cloud. We want to even migrate data, SQL Server data, from on-premise to the cloud. And using some tools, we can get that done. So we're going to start off by adding three projects, a data tier, a web tier, and then a visual tier. Later we'll add a Windows Phone 7 tier to the mix. But for now, we'll start off with this set of projects. Now, setting up your system, there were a couple challenges. When I wanted to consume the data layer from the web layer, there were some permission issues. So I started INET Manager and went in there and made local system the account of these processes, as you'll see here in a second. So you're changing some identities. In INET Manager, there it is. I'll put a blue box down below. You can see local system for the identity column. That's some of the settings I had to do. It took a little bit of effort to figure that out, but once I did, everything worked pretty well. So let's get started. So as you can see, there's going to be some additions. We're going to add a WCF service to the web tier, entity framework to the data tier, and of course a user interface, which also includes Windows Phone 7 a little bit later. Now the tiers are going to communicate with each other. For example, the web tier will talk to the data tier to get the relational data, and of course the visual tier will talk to the web tier to get its data via SOAP. So at this point, we've got a few things to do. We need to remember that the different tiers need to communicate. We've got the data tier talking directly to the database, but the entity framework is adding a lot of value in terms of making our code easy to write. So here's the visual interface for the Silverlight, the traditional Silverlight, and of course Windows Phone 7. So I think we're ready to really start the coding, get into Visual Studio, be patient, and work hard here. Okay, so one final little note. On my blog, full source code for everything you see here in this demo, as well as the snippets. Thank you very much. Okay, let's get started. We're going to fire up Visual Studio. Always run as administrator here. And once we do that, one of the things I like to do is start with a blank solution. Not a project, but a solution. And the solution is a collection of projects, because that's what we're going to have. So let's go ahead and say File New, and we're going to select Project. The place we want to go and find this is kind of down a little bit in the menu system. So I'm going to kind of provide a better folder here to work with. So let's say Temp Folder, Phone Cloud. And but we still need to change the use a different template. So it's under other project types, Visual Studio Solutions, and we'll choose a blank solution and just call this thing Phone Cloud App. So that's our total solution. We've added that. Of course, there is nothing there. So what we're going to do is we're going to add a new website to start off with. So we're going to select New Website. And this is the web tier. There's a lot of reasons we need a web tier. We'll get into those as we move forward. But we're just going to call this tier web layer. And to that, we're going to add different things like a WCF service. We're going to expose a data layer that we're about to create next. So we'll leave it as is for now. Let's go ahead next, and after this website's created, let's add a class library. Now this class library is going to represent our data layer. So we'll say File New Project. We'll go over here to the Windows tab and choose Class Library. And I'll just call this Tier Data Layer. This is clearly the class library that will talk to the database, essentially. We've abstracted away through its own project. We're not going to need Class 1 for now. We will be adding the ADO Entity Framework, but for now, let's delete Class 1. Let's talk a little bit about the database that we're going to talk to here in this project. And I like to use SQL Server Management Studio for that. So we're going to bring up SQL Server Management Studio as administrator. We're going to look at a database I have already created. And so later, you can create your own. I've blogged about it. So let me show you what I've created ahead of time. It's just a simple database with a one-to-many relationship between these two tables. I'm basically tracking stock market index data, you know, the S&P 500, the Dow Jones. Let's go down here to market index data, the name of my database, and there's two tables here. I'll show you the diagram here in a minute, and you can get a little better idea of this asset and asset prices table. Notice there is a one-to-many. So this is the database that we'll be talking to. Here's what the data might look like for assets. It's just a list of three ticker symbols, the Dow Jones, the Euro, and the S&P. Now, the child table to this is asset prices. Let's look at that. More details there. We got the date price and the open price. So it's just the one-to-many. This is the many side of the two tables, the asset prices. So it's one-to-many from assets to asset prices. So we're going to talk to this data. Later, we're even going to move this data to the cloud. But for now, let's leave it on-premise. Now, if you didn't get a chance to build these tables, obviously, they're new probably to you. Here is my blog post. Just search for Bruno Turkley. Today's Memorial Day, by the way. So we're going to move over to market index prices. And notice here is very detailed instructions. It includes the actual SQL script that you can use to execute, to create the database. I also have a blog on how to get rid of it because that might be tricky. Let's say you want to delete it and recreate it. Well, I'll show you how to do that too. So for now, I guess the next thing I'll show you is that there is this script you can look at that you can download from my blog, and you can see in the background there, it is the all the data for creating these two tables and this database market index data. Okay, so upcoming, we will start working with the ADO Entity Framework. Okay, here you can see all the various commands to create the database. We've got the create table, of course. It's all laid out for you. And naturally enough, towards the end, we've got the inserts to populate the tables with data. All common sense things you can do. So at this point, we're going to add a new item, which will be our ADO Entity Framework under the Data tab. Now, this is going to greatly simplify our access to the database. We're going to name this guy Model Stocks, and essentially, this is going to model the relational database and make my C# code really easy to work with. So basically, we have a couple options here, generate from a database or use an empty model. We already have a database we want to use. As we saw, we're going to generate from database. Go ahead and click Next. And at that point, you will be able to select the database that you wish to model. Well, we've already seen the one we want, so we're just going to say New Connection. We'll put a period here, which says local, on my local machine. And I will have the market index database to choose from, which we just looked at. And what it's going to do now is generate a model from that database. And notice market index data entities, when I write my code, that's going to be the way I talk to the database. Nice and simple. Makes database access very easy when you use the ADO Entity Framework. So let's choose our two tables, assets and asset prices. And at this point, it's going to generate a bunch of code. you'll see the kind of nice, pretty model first pop up on the screen. But in a moment, I'll show you some of the underlying code that's there, all that plumbing code that we don't want to write. So you can see the model's been built. It looks a lot like the diagram in SQL Server. And you know, in this model, it knows about the one-to-many. It was smart enough to learn. I'm going to set the system.data.entity.dll to copy local to true. Now let's look at the code that was generated. This is code we don't have to write. We don't have to write about creating a class called asset to model the asset table. It's done for us. Likewise, for the asset price table, we have our own class automatically generated for us. So at this point, we're going to go to the connection strings next. But let's just conclude on one thing, that the ADO entity framework does a lot of the grunt work for us. It just understands the database and does the right thing. So let's go to the next piece of work here, which is going to be the connection strings, because we need the connection string in two places, one in the website in the web config file, and also in the data layer, which it's already there in the app config. So we're going to copy from one to the other. Obviously, when we added the entity framework, it put in a connection string into app config for us. Well, that's the same exact configuration string that I need in my data tier. So now I'm going to just go to web config after I copy this guy and copy it in there. Now, there are many ways to handle this. In a production scenario, you'd probably simplify this, store it in one place. But just to make this demo easy, let's go ahead and copy from my data tier to my web tier. So now we're going to open up a web config. And in a web config, I'm going to paste in the connection string. Okay, pretty straightforward. Just remember, it's in two places. Later, we'll update this to point to the cloud. But next, let's talk about a setup challenge I had when I worked on this. It essentially had to do with my IIS and the application pool process. So it was a setup challenge, and I'll show you how to fix it. You go into INET Manager, and you just make some identity changes to a couple entries here. You can see it below. I'll put a little blue box. Notice it says local system there. That's what you want to change to if you run into cannot open the database errors. Okay, so coming up next, we'll do some more work and get this example a little farther along. Okay, the next thing we want to do here in this example is add a reference to the data layer from the web layer. Obviously, the web layer needs to get the data from the data layer. And that's what the point of this kind of diagram is to show that indeed the data tier provides data to the web tier, and hence the need to set a reference. So let's look a little bit further into this. Later, we're going to add a reference from our visual layer to the website, because after all, how will the visual tier, the Silverlight, get data from the website? Naturally, the data tier, as you saw, is getting data from the database through the ADO entity framework, as you just saw moments ago. So let's go ahead and add that reference. And the next thing we're going to do is add a reference to the ADO.net data system.data.entity, which lets us talk to entity objects. So realize that the data layer needs to expose data that it gets from the data layer. So that's the big news here, and ultimately it's going to use a WCF service to expose that data to any clients that can connect to it. And that's what we'll do later in the demo. So the next step here at this point is to go work on adding that service. So we're going to search for a Silverlight-enabled WCF service. We will call it Service Stocks. And Service Stocks is what the outside world is going to talk to when it needs to get data. So let's go ahead now and write some code, some methods that can be called through SOAP. So we're going to get rid of the do work, which was given to us for free. We're going to paste in our own get asset prices. This will be a method that we call. It's called get asset prices. We will call it from both Windows Phone 7 and from a Silverlight application hosted in a browser. Notice it talks to our entity objects and returns a list of market index prices. You can tell that by the function signature. And you can see that it's a link query. So it even has a where clause that it gets, that it creates based on the ticker that was passed in. The phone app will pass in a ticker and will instantiate market index data entities. And then finally, we'll query the database. Notice there's a special class being built on the fly, market index prices. Market index prices. So we'll need to create that class in our data tier in a moment. That's the next step, is to create this class, because it's got asset ID, date price, and open price will be its properties. Now it's part of the data layer. So we're going to add a class to the data layer and essentially put in some data members so that this method can return a list of market index prices. And that's what that link query was creating. So let's also remember, though, that we will need to set some references as well. Okay, now that our using statement is complete, let's think about adding some methods to the service stocks class. So here we are. Here's the same old function we talked about. As discussed previously, we still need market index prices added. And the point of this whole class is to stream the results into something that Silverlight can consume. So the three data fields here will map to columns in our list box. Asset ID, date price, and open price will exist in the list box in the Windows Phone 7 list box control, as well as the Silverlight hosted in browser of choice. So we're going to add this class into our project. This class is going to essentially be used by the web tier as well in the link query as described previously. Let's go ahead and resolve the runtime serialization that was already in the data layer. We didn't need to add the reference, just the using statement. Let's go ahead now and finish implementing and understanding the code here. I think it looks as though it's going to compile, look for the output, and verify that indeed everything's running clearly. So there's a couple little minor typos to fix here. Here it says tier data. It should say tier data layer. That's a pretty easy error to fix. So we'll just go over here and first add the using statement for the list collection, the generic that we're returning from the function. And now to fix the tier data and add the text layer. So that should resolve well, should compile correctly. Now, hey, why not show some of the errors I get when I develop? I think we're in good shape now. Build succeeded. So at this point, we've got the WCF service running and callable. It's talking to the data layer. We've got a log complete now. We're almost ready to start talking about the client. Let's verify that our SVC file will run. That represents our WCF service that we added to the website. And if you see this page, it means that the call was successful. So that's always a test I do to verify we've got good connectivity. Okay, just to verify, it'll even work in Chrome. I tested it in Firefox, so should work regardless of the browser that you're using. So if you get an error on this page, well, you need to stop, take a look at what's going on, do some research. Don't go forward until you resolve that particular issue. The SVC file needs to be browsable. Okay, so let's go off into some review here. We're going to add our visual tier at this point. It's going to be Silverlight. As I said, we're going to migrate this to Windows Phone 7. But first, let's now, after adding the visual tier, the Silverlight tier, we'll need to connect back up to the web tier to get the data through the WCF call. Once again, we'll add a Silverlight application. It will talk to the tier web layer to get data through the WCF service embedded there. Now remember, the Silverlight application or the phone can't directly talk to the data layer. You need to go through the intermediary of the web layer. So here we are. We're basically building our Silverlight project. It's going to embed the executable Silverlight code into the tier web layer. That's where we will host the client. So you may choose to host it elsewhere. We're going to host it in the web tier. So the web tier is doing a bunch of things. It's hosting the WCF service. It's hosting the Silverlight controller, which is what all the users will see and navigate to. Okay, so at this point, you can see the mainpage.xaml. That is our visual interface for our Silverlight application, the visual tier. Notice we got a little grid here. We'll start with a little text block just to kind of make sure things work. We're just going to say hello. And this is a good little test to make sure as well that everything is executing clearly. So I'll just give it a little bit bigger font. You can see it showed up in the designer. Rebuild the whole project. And then we're going to run either directly the ASPX file here, or we'll use the debugger. But notice we've got the zap file in there now. And that is the executable generated by Silverlight. So once you compile the visual layer, the Silverlight, it ends up in the web layer, the zap file, which is the executable. And finally, we embed that in the web page, the ASPX file. So to test it, we'll run either the HTML or the ASPX file where Silverlight is embedded. So let's go ahead now and set the startup project as the web layer and start up a ASPX page as the startup page so that we can debug it. Yes, I want to modify web config to debug. And hopefully we'll see hello world in the browser. And we'll know that at least we've got that part of the software working. The next step will be now to connect the web tier to the visual tier. Because the data is in the web tier now. It's being exposed there, and Silverlight needs to get it. So it's going to talk to the web tier to get it. And we do that by adding a reference from the visual tier, from Silverlight. We're going to connect up to the web tier from Silverlight through this interface. We'll call it Service Stocks, which is going to show up in our C# code. That's the name that we use programmatically to talk to the web service. A little proxy will be generated for us. So at this point, it looks like everything's running smoothly in terms of talking to the WCF service. The next step is to build up the visual interface and start adding some more meaningful XAML here, and maybe put a list box in, a text box, a search button, and so on. At this point, we want to start building up our interface. We're going to make it black so later it will match the phone. And we'll model our interface here on the traditional Silverlight browser-oriented control. We'll try to make an interface similar to what's going to be targeted on the mobile device. So to do that, we're going to add some XAML code, which is the markup language to build up the Silverlight interface. And as I've said, we'll add a list box and a couple other controls here. As you can see, we've got quite a full screen of interface here. We've got the ticker symbol to be entered. You click the search button, and next thing you know, you've got the data coming back to the list box. So a couple things to notice here. We've got some formatting that I had to do, and that's one of the big lessons that we're going to get into a little bit later. So notice we have nice clean dates there. We've got formatted 2 decimal points for the open price. So we'll have to write some code to get that done. So the 4 steps to kind of like formatting is first adding this namespace tag in our XAML. Then we add a user control declaration. And finally, we need to add a code behind. At that point, you're ready to kind of go back to your bound columns and connect them to the formatting capabilities. So let's start with that namespace. As I said, that's step one. So we're going to call this thing converter. And you're basically pointing to yourself so that in the XAML it's going to pick up the objects local to our visual layer, our Silverlight application. So we've done that. At this point, we're going to add the user control. That's step two when you need to add your formatters and your converters. So let's go ahead and do that. We've got the visual tier done. So again, we've just finished with the namespace, and now we're simply going to add a user control declaration into the XAML. And that's just three lines of XAML code. Okay, so we're at that point now. We will add the user control to the mainpage.xaml, the Silverlight control. Notice the class name is myFormatter. We'll need to know that when we add our class to this project, to the Visual Layer project, because we still need to add some CS code, some C# code. So let's go ahead and do that now. This is the final step to adding your own custom formatting, is adding this class. We're calling this class myFormatter. That's how it's being referenced in the XAML. And again, this class is some generic code, some boilerplate code for the most part, to enable the formatting of my numbers, which in my case is both a date type and then a decimal. So let's go ahead and paste in that class that derives from iValueConverter. There's a convert method and a convert back. I've only implemented the convert method. Again, some kind of boilerplate code. I'm going to resolve some references. iValueConverter, dragged in some using statements. And now that's done. So really, the only final step to making the formatting work is to bind them to the columns in the list box. The ticker symbol, the date, and the price. So when you finally do the binding, it's kind of automatic at that point. You've already set it all up. So essentially, we've done all of the steps to prepare. The final step is to consume the formatting, to use it from within the XAML code. That's the final part. Reference the conversion code from inside the list box. So there's a couple extra little statements you put in your XAML to do that, to just say format me by the way I defined it in steps 1 through 3. Okay, so at this point, let's go ahead and add to the grid control. We want to build up the interface a little bit more. So notice I've added two text blocks. One of them says stock market data. The other one says search screen. Notice I've added two rows as well to this XAML-based control, this Silverlight control. So we still need to add another grid, a grid to contain the search criteria. So we're going to continue to build this up. We're going to add a text block, a text box, a command button, and a list box. So 4 or 5 more things. Again, this is to build up the interface so that someone can search for a specific ticker. And the results are displayed in a list box. So notice we can see ticker symbol on the designer now, a text box, and a search button. And below that, I have a list box for the results. So at this point, we're just going to walk through a couple of these controls. Make ourselves familiar. Notice I've got a list box there. And notice as well that I've got the text block for the ticker symbol and then a search text box and finally the button. So as you can imagine, when I click search, that's going to engage the WCF service and the web tier, get the results, and then put those results in the list box that's right below. So I'm going to play with height. I need room for my list box. So at this point, I could almost paste in that very same code as I did before with my traditional Silverlight in a web page. So for this list box, I am just going to paste in the list box code here. Notice that we're just binding to the three columns. Those are the three columns that are returned when we make the WCF call. right? And those three columns appear in the list box. Formatted, of course. We'll talk about the formatting a little bit later, but at this point, we've got the whole picture on the interface just about done. We've got the search controls to type in S&P 500, and then we've got the results. And notice here, we've got the converter code. So this was the same stuff I was working on earlier to make the numbers look nice and clean. So this search button is going to basically pass a ticker symbol to my WCF service. It will return the results and populate the list box. So let's look at the event procedure that's going to execute when the user clicks on the search button. So I believe I have a search click event here we'll navigate to. Inside that event, we will call the WCF service in the tier web layer. So there is the code that we need to type in, search click. Very simply put, this is going to instantiate the service reference that we made. So let's put our using statement here to make talking to the proxy in the visual layer a little bit easier. So this project is tiervisuallayer.servicedocs. That's what we need to put here. Now we can start talking to service docs to get our data. So it's a simple case of calling the client version of service docs, instantiating that. And then, of course, things are asynchronous here. So there's going to be a callback, and this is the part that generates the callback. So right after plus equals, hit your tab key twice, and it creates the callback for you automatically. We still have a little bit more work to do. We did set up the callback well. We need to write code for the callback, but first we need to asynchronously pass the ticker symbol to the WCF service in the tier web layer so that we can get the results in the callback. So here we are passing in the contents of the text box. The user might have typed in S&P 500. And at this point, we're done calling. At this point, we need to implement the callback. So the second parameter to this callback is the data. And we'll put that data into the list box programmatically. So notice this second parameter here, E, indeed has the data in the result field. So I'll say E.result. Let's first check to make sure that we have results. Let's check for nullness. If it's not null, then I will add it to my list box. The list box has a property called items. List items source. So we will assign the result to the item source property of the list box. And finally, maybe we'll display the list box because I believe it starts off with visibility collapsed. So what I'm going to do when I get the successful result, I'm going to say visibility should be visible. So we can see the results. So we're just about done at this point writing code. We're just about ready to execute this guy and see if, indeed, we can successfully call the WCF service and get some data. So we're going to recompile everything, make sure that there's no mistakes. And at this point, we're ready to actually run the application, the final Silverlight, and we should successfully be able to retrieve some data. So here we are running. Let's go ahead and type in our standard S&P 500. Click on the search button on the Silverlight client, and indeed it did successfully retrieve data from the visual web tier. Okay, so the next step finally is to add our Windows Phone 7 project, and that's kind of the final step in this in terms of new interfaces. So we're going to choose Silverlight for Windows Phone 7 because everyone knows that it's either XNA or Silverlight as your development paradigm. So we're going to create a project called WP7 of type Windows Phone application. This application will be very, very similar to our traditional Silverlight app that we just built. Notice the designer shows both the phone and the XAML. And I'm going to go in here and just kind of tweak things very slightly to make the phone operate correctly with the previously written code. So there's the visual interface. This is the XAML. Notice we've already got kind of that header area that we can say, you know, search for stocks and so on. This is just the kind of title of the page. So I'll just say stock search here, and we'll go into this capitalized. This is all according to the Metro design guidelines. You can read about those. So at this point, we just need to add the search criteria controls, that is the text block, the text box, and the command button. But first, let's set a reference again, just like we did for Silverlight. The visual web tier will set a reference to the WCF service, because as you know, the phone cannot talk to the data layer directly. It needs to get the data from a WCF service. So we'll set our service reference to that service, just like we did before. And pretty much it's going to be cookie cutter the same. We're going to write some code behind. We're going to implement our converters and our formatters. So it's going to be very similar to what we did before, almost identical. That's kind of the beauty of this paradigm, is that all those skills for Silverlight can be leveraged in two places. So notice over here there's a content panel where they say place your additional content here, and I'm simply going to paste in that very same XAML code as we did before, the exact same stuff. So notice there it is. It's a little thin there because of the way the phone has built-in stylings. That's very, very trivial to change. I just put minimum in front of all my heights and my widths, and it's just going to be just fine if I specify the minimum. So I'm just doing that in four places for the text box and the button. And when I go back to the designer, they'll look normal and complete. That's pretty much it. Copy and paste. Make a couple minor adjustments. Look at that. It's almost identical. And that includes the list box. And again, the list box had all those nice features with the formatters and so on, but we still need to work on that part. So let's go ahead with the namespace. Remember, that was always step one for our converters. I think I called it a converter, but I think convert I'll need to fix a little bit later. So again, I'm setting a namespace to myself, WP7. And now that user control, you know, that's step two when we do formatters. I just need to add step three now, which is that custom my formatter class. That was that boiler code that I showed previously. It's going to be the exact same syntax, everything about it. That boilerplate code, it's going to paste right in. Just maybe resolve a reference. Don't even need to do that. So it looks like the formatting aspect is complete. The list box is complete. I would say we're very, very close to running. I might have to fix my typo here. I think I said convert instead of converter. I think I'll find out when I try to compile here. Yep, sure enough, converter's not looking good. So let me go up to my namespace where I made the mistake. Oh, there it is. So just add an ER here. Recompile, and hopefully we'll be able to run our Silverlight WP7 Windows Phone. I did need to add a using statement for my converter. That's about the final step here before I compile. So let me just do one more build, a complete build at this point. A lot of code we've added, all available at the website. Now, the obvious final step to making this succeed, we never wrote our code behind once the user clicked the search button. We did that before, but not with the Windows Phone 7 project. So let's do the same thing we did before and implement the search button. And it's going to be the same scenario. There'll be a callback. We'll instantiate a service stocks client, which indeed is I'm going to call the web tier to get the data back from the WCF service call. Just like before, we're going to add our using statements. Again, this is verbatim, same exact code, same exact steps. So it's a good review. It goes quick. Make sure you know all these steps. So we're instantiating the client. Common mistake is to forget that word client on service stocks client. So once again, we're going to say plus equals tab tab. That automatically generates this callback. But again, first we need to finish calling from the search click event. We still need to call it asynchronously, passing in whatever the user typed into the text box. For example, they might have typed in Dow Jones, DJ, or S&P 500. There's our search text box being passed, whose contents, whose value is being passed to the WCF service. So now let's once again make it visible, the list box. Let's go ahead now and check to make sure we did have a result. If it's not equal to null, that means I have something. Let me go ahead and assign the results to the item's source of the list box, just like before, e.result. So at this point, I think we've got the whole thing built. Let's do a final rebuild. And at this point, we'll just set the Windows Phone 7 as the startup project, and we'll be able to run. So let's do that. Set it as startup. Go ahead and click the debugger run. Make sure we target the emulator, not the physical device. I don't have that hooked up. Let's go ahead and target the emulator. Oh, there's the emulator. And in a moment, we'll see my application fire up beautifully as we would expect. There it is. So I'm going to go ahead and type in, say, S&P 500, just like we did before. Notice the virtual keyboard is up. I can click on it with my mouse or do control page up to use my keyboard. Click search. Hopefully we'll get some results back from the WCF service call. Indeed, we did. The formatting worked just as we had in the past succeeded in calling from the traditional browser-based Silverlight control. So let's do the next step here. The next step is to actually migrate to the cloud. Take our on-premise database using the migration wizard, which I get from CodePlex, address above there, and here it is. We're going to download it and run it, and it's going to take our on-premise data and move it to SQL Azure. So go ahead and click download and agree. I'm going to basically unzip mine to my local temp folder and then run it from there. It's a very small, tight, excellent executable. So there's the unzipped, almost unzipped information. Go ahead and put this into my temp folder, say SQL Migration Wizard. Install, do an extract, and then I'm going to run the executable. The executable is going to allow me to easily copy up to the cloud, data structures and all. So there it is. There's the migration wizard. Run it as administrator. Notice it's got some options here. That's what it looks like. We're going to analyze and migrate our SQL database. Our on-premise SQL database will end up completely up in the cloud. So here is my portal. I have a SQL Azure account. I've logged in. You can see my server name, that BJZKZ, there in the middle of the screen. So that will be the address I need to specify in my connection string when I'm connecting to the cloud once my data is migrated. So you can see I have a list of databases below. You can see Baynet's one of them. We can delete and recreate that for you just to see how SQL Azure works. So once again, this will be the target database that the migration wizard will target when it exports my on-premise data to the cloud, to SQL Azure. So notice I've got a number of databases already defined. There's a web and a business version. Let's delete or drop the Baynet database and recreate it just so you can see the process. So we're going to click on Create Database. There's a web and a business edition. The web edition gives you up to 5 gigabytes, but the business edition goes all the way up to 50 gigabytes, which is pretty substantial. So let's go ahead to the minimum web 1 gigabyte, create it, and we're done. We just need to know the server name and the database name, and that's what the migration wizard wants, in addition to your credentials. Firewall settings allow you an additional level of security. You can define who is allowed by way of IP address to connect up to the database. So I've already done that. So why the cloud? Well, there's a lot of reasons. You can pause here if you want to read them all, but it's clear the industry is headed this way. It offers a lot of positive things for a lot of scenarios. It's not perfect for everything. There are some concerns too, which is natural for any new technology. But for a lot of scenarios, the good outweighs the bad. And you're going to find the SQL Azure to be an excellent part of the Windows Azure platform. So some of the concerns here, these come up when I do presentations. People have read about these. So it's obvious that this is reasonable. Everybody's working hard in the industry to address these. We have service level agreements. This is not a binding one in front of you, but that's just giving you some idea when you look at uptime, you know, double nines, three nines, and so on. What does it relate to per month? So what we're going to do is we're going to take our on-premise SQL Server by way of the migration wizard and put it up into the cloud. So that's the main task, is to migrate it. Why? Well, there's a lot of benefits. One of the things I can do is instantiate and scale, like add two more if I need some quick scale, some more extra storage. The good news is each one of those has a triple backup. So I feel pretty safe. It's not perfect, but triple backups is more than I have on my on-premise. Let's walk through and do some of these things. So once again, we're going to migrate our on-premise. That's localhost. That's my on-premise database. I'm going to select it, and then I'm going to target the cloud, my SQL Azure. So my on-premise database is called Market Index Data. We saw it previously. But my target database is Baynet. So first, it allows me, the wizard that is, will allow me to narrow what I want to migrate. I've only got two tables. I'm going to migrate both of those. There's not perfect parity between the two databases in the cloud and on-premise, but there's a lot of parity. In my case, 100%. I'm going to now generate the SQL script that will be executed in SQL Azure to recreate my table structures, and it will insert the data. So now let's specify my server in the cloud, right? I'm getting that from my SQL Azure account, as we saw previously. I'm going to need to specify the server, the target server, that I get from my portal. So I'm going to type that in. I'm also going to type in my username and password. And the wizard is going to connect up, and it's going to read the databases I have up in SQL Azure and let me target one of them. And we've already said it's going to be Baynet. So here I have obviously more than one database, but it's Baynet up in the cloud that I'm going to connect to and migrate my on-premise data to. So let's go ahead and execute. It's created the table that's now copying the data. And in a second, we will be done. We are done. We can close this. And the next thing I want to do that's very interesting is I want to use SQL Server Management Studio to connect up to my instance in the sky, my SQL Azure, and look at the data and make sure that it's been successfully migrated. So I think this is a really cool feature that I got such a powerful SQL Server tooling available to work with the cloud. So first I'm connecting to my local on-premise, but if I click on the connect button, what I can do is I can actually go look at my SQL Azure in the sky. So this is the connection point to the sky. I'm going to basically specify that same server name you saw me specify before, the one starting with BJ. There it is. I'm going to use SQL Server authentication, passing in my login credentials. And literally, I've got a lot of the same tooling available to me as though it were on-premise. So now I've got two simultaneous connections, one to on-premise, one to my SQL Azure. And let's verify the tables are there. They are there. Notice asset prices is there. I can even go query it if I wish. It is there. I'm assuming the data also got migrated. So let's take a look. Let's execute a select statement here. In this case, we have to click the execute button to make it happen. And we'll see the very same data that was on-premise, same data. But I'd like to maybe update the data in the sky. Maybe change one of the rows to 1,000,000 for the open price. So I'm going to execute this update statement here to change the first row. Again, we are targeting the cloud version, not the on-premise. So that's done. Let's verify it got updated. Sure enough, I see $1,000,000 there. It's in the open price. So we successfully upgraded. I'm sorry, we successfully updated the data in SQL Azure. So the on-premise is not 1,000,000. We have different data because we updated the cloud version and did not update the on-premise. So you can see the difference here. The on-premise stayed the same, but the cloud version of the data is higher. So that's a way we'll be able to distinguish in our interface, did we successfully get the cloud data? Did we consume it correctly? What do we need to do to successfully connect to the data in the sky? Basically, change the connection string in two places, in the app config and web config files of each of those two layers. So Windows Phone 7, of course, is talking to the tier web layer, just like the old visual tier did. That's where the data is. It's got to migrate through the firewall, up into the sky, grab the data, send it back, and display it in the interface. So it's got to travel up into the cloud and back until it's visible in Windows Phone 7. And you can see the $1,000,000 is there, but we still need to do an update. So at this point, the only thing we need to change is the connection string in two places. That's it. That's the only change you're going to make. Those two connection strings are in the same place as before, in the tier web layer and the tier data layer. So I'm hiding my password, of course. But there you can see in the connection string, I'm pointing to the server name. So I'm just making slight modifications to my connection string based on the database I'm targeting and the server in the sky that I get from my SQL Azure portal account. So we just modify the connection string in both places. Very important. Common mistake to forget that. So let's go ahead and recopy that connection string from the data layer and move it into the web layer in the same place as before. So we'll just comment out the old one to keep it around if you want to compare. You'll need to remember your own information here for your password for your database that you set on the portal. So at this point, literally we can just run the very same application, rebuild it and rerun it. We should see our $1,000,000. All we did, the magic here is to display with just a connection string change. It's a beautiful thing to see. So let's go ahead and try it. Let's make sure it's going to go to Phoenix, Arizona, where the data center is containing my database. It's hosting it there in the data center. I click on search. Sure enough, I'm hoping, here we go, that I get my data, and I do. And there's the $1,000,000. There's the $1,000,000 from that change we made previously. Okay, that wraps things up. Thanks for watching. Feel free to visit my blog, get source code, get the snippets. So just visit my blog. The source code is there. The snippets are there.
Just keep repeating the steps until you get the applications to run. Okay, thanks for watching and have a good day.